This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Welcome to a special episode of the Really Awful Movies Podcast, episode 68B. We're talking with the men behind four incredibly, disturbingly awesome short films, Consumption, Worm, Familiar, and Air. Zach Green and Richard Powell, together they make up Fatal Pictures. So, we're talking with the men behind Fatal Pictures, Richard Powell and Zach Green. Richard, how are you?
Good to talk to you.
Good, and Zach, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
So, you guys co-founded Fatal Pictures in 2007, correct?
Yes, we did. Richard and I, we met back in film school here in Toronto in 2002-03, where we initially met, and I was actually in post. I was editing a film for Richard that he pitched to the faculty, and I got picked up this film, and he was looking for an editor. I was at school for post-production. I happened to apply to the ad that was posted. And that's initially how I started my rapport with Richard, was essentially in the editing room.
And you guys have made four pretty fucking awesome short films, in my opinion, starting with Consumption, and then Worm, following up with Familiar, and your latest one, Air, which is now sort of making the festival rounds. And congratulations on winning Best Short Film at the Morbido Film Festival.
Yes, that was Air's first award, and hopefully not the last.
I hope not, because when I first saw it, I was reviewing basically every short film that was going to be playing at Toronto After Dark. So there's about 30 short films, and you know, not wanting to play favorites, I pretty much said that Air was my favorite of the bunch. There is something very amazing about that film, and I want to talk to you guys about it a bit later. But before we talk about your films in particular. So you guys met in 2007 now. What made you decide to start Fatal Pictures?
Just to correct you, we actually met back in 2002 film school.
Yep.
And we graduated film school in 2003-04 and went on to producing films together. And then late 2006 rolled around. And me and Richard started talking, and we figured we wanted to start a proper production company and incorporate it, and market our first film under the company, which we started the company in 2007. The following year came our first picture, Consumption.
Now, so Zach, you're the producer, and Richard, you're the writer and director, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's kind of the way we decided to, I guess, structure our partnership is. We both kind of have different strengths. I tend to lean towards the creative side, and Zach kind of gets, I think, a little bit more, feels more comfortable at this point doing a lot of the logistics, a lot of the dealing with people, arranging things, making deals, promotions. And the great thing is you don't have two guys who want to do the exact same thing, so we kind of are actually one entity that has the benefit of having two uniquely, talented people in different areas, and that really gives an advantage over, I think, a lot of competitors. And I've even had a conversation with lots of people that I work with and have talked to and worked over years, and they're always kind of amazed at the way me and Zach work, because the stuff that I have, like, no interest in, he kind of just naturally comes in there and fills in and does such a great job at that. And then with me creatively, the same thing. I obsess about my writing and trying to get the next film going. And what's great, too, is we both can do the other thing. Like, Zach has an interest in eventually writing and directing. And mm-hmm. I I can do the producing stuff too, but what's great is I let Zach take care of that so I can do what I want to do, and vice versa. So it's an interesting partnership, and it's been working out great so far.
And I love the medium of short films, but I wanted to ask you guys, why did you decide to go the short film route as opposed to the feature?
The reality is short films, they don't have a lot of glamour and glitz and fun associated with them. It's kind of, it's looked down upon by a lot of people. I mean, all the time we're having guys tell us, why are you wasting time with shorts? Why don't you just try to do the feature? And I finally gotten to the point where I realized it's like not doing short films is the same thing as somebody going to the Olympics and not training. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're doing yourself a disservice to learning the craft. Like, I don't want to just make a feature film. I want to make a good feature film. And I think the only way I'm ever going to get up to that challenge is by doing these shorts, learning what I'm good at, and then the things I'm not good at, improving on those the next time around. And, eventually when we get that feature in, it's not just going to be good, it's going to be great, mm-hmm. and it's going to make up for all of the time that we haven't been making a feature, and we're going to kind of jump further ahead than a lot of the people who just come out of the gate making a mediocre feature that maybe doesn't have the traction because they didn't know what they were doing, they weren't working with the right people, they didn't have the right amount of money. So we're just kind of learning the ropes now, and it's kind of comforting to know that we can make mistakes, and mistakes aren't quite as high right now because it's just shorts, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, we take it deadly serious.
Yes.
But it's great to know that we're still in the training stages. So when the real performance comes, the real show comes, which is features, I think we're going to be ready for it. So well, that's kind of my take on why shorts are very important. I also love short storytelling. Like, my favorite author is H.P. Lovecraft, and he almost exclusively wrote short stories.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, as Stephen King, Clive Barker, a lot of these people write a lot of short stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. So, I don't know. I've always loved short medium, and I would love to continue making them, even when you make features.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, yeah, of course, a lot of aspiring filmmakers want to, you know, just jump right in and dive right in and make that feature film. But, I mean, the fact that you guys said, that is a very apt analogy in terms of, walking before you can run. But at the same time, like, I feel you guys are running because, I mean, your short films are absolutely incredible. I mean, they're absolute gut punches. Really, really challenging, harrowing, psychological horror. With really, really resonating themes, unbelievable stuff. So, I mean, I just want to, you know, congratulate you guys on making some incredible shorts.
Well, thank you. I mean, we're just glad that they get any kind of, you know, reception or recognition at all. I mean, like, when I found out that there had won Morbido,
mm-hmm.
I was completely surprised. I don't think about awards at all, and I have this conversation with a lot of people as a filmmaker. I don't think about awards at all. Don't get me wrong, it's great to win them, but if you go around expecting them, it's one of those things that when you don't get them, you're going to get down, and you're going to start becoming motivated by getting these type of things like awards or big festival selection and the great reviews. These things are all very important. At the end of the day, the thing I'm most worried about is just being satisfied with what we've done, and the great thing with these shorts is I'm always happy with them, but there's so much that I want to do better, and the next short will hopefully feature an opportunity to improve. So it's great, though, to hear that anybody responds to them, and it's always a surprise, and it's always such a warm feeling to know that somebody else has kind of picked up on your frequency or what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thank you very much.
But now, before we talk about the actual pictures, I want to ask you, so how do you go about raising funds for your films?
Zach, you want to handle some of that? Yeah, so for all of our films, from consumption to, I guess I'll say familiar, was self-financed out of our own pockets, family, friends. But me and Richard would essentially raise the money ourselves. It would be, majority would be our own money. And then for Air, we, in 2000, what was it, 2014, we wanted to produce our final short film, and Air was it.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, we just didn't have the thousands and thousands of dollars you need to produce quality film. So we took the Kickstarter, which was
it was new to us, the whole crowdfunding movement. We thought it was a fabulous, great idea. I mean, you're not forcing people to kick in anything. You're asking people, you're selling yourself, essentially.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're basically showing, we're asking you, look, this is what we've done in the past. We're selling ourselves on the page. Everyone attached the project, this and that. And like, look what we've done in the past. We can only hope is your generosity and contribution. We can, you know, we've proven that we can do it. We can make these great short films. And we raised a little bit more than our target goal on Kickstarter, which was phenomenal. We still had to go in, you know, we still have to go into our own pockets for a nice little piece. But yeah, and we're hoping the next film, the feature film, we're trying to get financed right now for our first feature.
Well, let's talk a bit about Air then, because, I mean, I basically, I look at Worm, Familiar, and Air as almost like a bit of a trilogy. I mean, of course, I mean, Robert Nolan is in all three, so that's a connective thread. But there's also, I mean, Worm and Familiar is interesting in the sense that Robert Nolan plays twin brothers, correct?
That's right, yeah.
But what I'm seeing from Worm to Familiar, I mean, okay, you have these two twin brothers, and there's a very, you know, there's a connective thing with the inner monologue of these two people that are somewhat kind of going insane. But with Worm, it was very much, I mean, it was just human element in the sense it's just a man going insane. And then we get to Familiar, and, you know, you're starting to introduce the creature elements, but in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my interpretation was it was quite metaphorical.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Familiar is you could kind of take it however you wanted. Was the creature literal, or was it just some sort of a manifestation of his broken psyche? I mean, there are things at the end of the film that maybe kind of point more in one direction than the other, but I do like the idea that somebody could read Familiar as it could be a literal interpretation, like he literally had something living inside him, or the metaphorical approach, which I enjoy, and that's something that I did again with Air.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I always respond best to films that sort of allow you to have multiple readings, or a really very deep subtext, and with Familiar, that's just sort of what I was offering, like, you could take it either way.
And then we get to Air, and then, I mean, Air, in my opinion, is an incredible piece of art for a few reasons. Number one, it's disturbing, which is what great art does. It's polarizing, I think, because of some of the themes that it explores. But the interesting thing is the themes are not, you don't beat the audience over the head with the themes. It's sort of, it's there. It's very, very creepy, but it's like it's up to the audience to interpret, you know, what the fuck is going on here. I have my own interpretations. I don't want to spoil Air for those that haven't seen it, but it's some really fucked up stuff.
I don't know that the intent is to polarize, but the intent was definitely to not worry about how an audience is going to react to something. I think a problem with certain films, especially films that claim to be horror films or just very serious dramatic films,
mm-hmm.
they worry about what's going to happen when certain people see the film or how it's going to be received by wider audiences. And I don't get me wrong, there's all sorts of room for safe, sanitized cinema, but I kind of love cinema that feels dangerous and it feels a little edgy. This film does not in any way go in your face with any kind of explicit graphic imagery. It's all in the suggestion, right? But the great thing, and just like I did with Worm, where there's no actual on-screen violence, it's all the power of suggestion, right? So, with Air, my goal, again, wasn't to polarize, but it was just not caring. I didn't really care what people's reaction would be. I just knew there would be a reaction. I was dealing with things that aren't often dealt with in cinema, especially not in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Most horror films, you know what I mean? They're there to kind of make the audience have a hoot and a good time, and you go in there and there's no stakes, and you come out and, oh, that was fun, they got away and they killed the bad guy, and half of them died, and I can't wait for the sequel. What was there, when that thing ends, like when we were sitting at the Toronto After Dark screening,
it ended, and there was silence right. for like a couple of seconds, and then people clapped. And that's because I know what happened. They just saw something they weren't expecting to see. And that's what I think is important and what we want to do with cinema, show them people aren't expecting to see. So.
But it's interesting too because I mean, like with you're right. Like I mean, with familiar. I'm sorry, my mistake. With Worm, purely psychological in the sense that like it just starts off like okay, it's basically a day in the life of this man who's like a completely normal man, and you know it's almost like it's reaching this crescendo, and you're ready for something explosive to happen, and then it doesn't. But then the way it ends, it's like well, tomorrow's another day, and it can happen then. And he's out there, you know?
Absolutely. There's also another element to that film that I wanted to have a certain impact on the audience. So, we start watching the film, and for, you know, I guess it's 21 minutes, 22 minutes long. Mm-hmm. I'd say for the first couple of minutes, the things he's thinking, his internal monologues, they're kind of dark, but they're also humorous. And he's relatable in a way because he has this kind of exhausted, tired, belabored, working man attitude that I think anybody who is maybe a little sick and tired of the job or sick and tired of dealing with coworkers or people can relate to. So you're kind of on board with this guy. And then you find yourself being dragged kind of into this relationship with somebody who you thought you knew. And by the time you realize who he really is and how dark and how deep this hole is that you got into, you get the reveal of the gun, you get the reveal of the suitcase, which in the suitcase itself is like a physical manifestation of his mind. It's literally been opened up and you get to look inside of his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the expectation of violence. And I feel like killing the violence off would cheapen the psychological impact that there isn't came before, because I think what was interesting, and I saw this reaction, there were some people when they first saw him, they were actually expecting the shooting to happen. It's understandable, I was setting it up. But what I noticed and what I thought was going to happen did happen is some people actually kind of were disappointed that the shooting didn't happen. Because as a horror film, like we were marketing it as, you expect the violence.
Right.
So when they didn't get it, people kind of felt let down. And what I found interesting about that is, here's this guy that you're thinking is a scumbag we ended the film, but you're kind of disappointed that you didn't see him shoot a bunch of kids. So it's kind of this interesting little game on playing with the audience.
But that's what I appreciate about the films that you guys have made is that, I mean, you guys don't go for the jump scares. You don't go for, you know, basically the sort of cheap exploitive elements that the audience might be expecting. You go for something a lot more cerebral. And I think that's what, you know, gives them a much more, gives it a lot more resonance. And getting back to Air, talking about, you know, psychological and cerebral, I mean, again, you know, I watch this movie, and from the very second you establish a tone, and that tone is absolutely creepy. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with Bill Oberst Jr. I mean, his not to get anything away from Robert Nolan, who's fantastic in all three of your shorts, but Bill Oberst Jr., man, is he redefined creepy.
Yeah, Bill's amazing. Bill's just an incredible talent. It was amazing to work with to see Robert Nolan playing the opposite character that he usually plays. Robert Nolan essentially is really like the character that Bill is to a degree in Worm is Familiar, mm-hmm. like the dark, really dark guy. And he's so not like that in Air. He plays almost the opposite type of character in a way. You could almost call him the protagonist. Except when you realize what he's doing in the film as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, but that's what I find fun about the movie, is that moral ambiguity. Who am I siding with? Whose journey is this? And just to watch those two play off one another was just like sparks flying. It was amazing. Like, Robert's, I think, the most talented actor me and Richard have worked with in Toronto, in Canada, I should say, thus far. And Bill definitely is one of the hardest working independent horror actors, genre actors in the States. And it was just such an amazing honor. And it was just incredible to bring these two together and watch with Richard's words on a paper come to life. It was crazy. The cinematography by Michael Yari Davidson was just phenomenal. The music,
producers usually scores our co-producers' films, Red Sneakers. That was another big part of the movie. We worked with a co-production company, Red Sneakers, which Richard and I met on the festival circuit when we were touring Air back in 2010, mm-hmm. where Mark and Ron were, they were on the festival circuit with one of their films called Remote. And we initially met at a film festival back, 2010, and we just kept in touch ever since, and just, you know, would bounce ideas off one another. We just really respected one another, genuinely liked each other, and this was a great opportunity to work together. So, with working with this co-production company, crowdfunding our last film, we're all really great new things, and working with an amazing talent like Bill was just... again, like Richard was saying earlier, this is all stuff getting us ready for the feature film. It's like training. The days are potentially, our days are fucking long on set. it's just getting us ready, you know. We're mentally getting ready, because like after a full day, 10, 12 hours, you're fucking drained. You're mentally drained.
Sure, yep.
And it's just getting us ready for the big game, for the bigger show that's like a month or I don't know however long the principal photography will last. But for films, yeah, they're just getting us ready for the feature, and we just couldn't be happier with the feedback and the responses. Again, it's an award just getting into a film festival like Morbido, like Toronto After Dark. Mm-hmm. Those are awards in itself getting in. If you do happen to win an award at the festival, that is such a bonus.
What was a typical length of production for your for the three shorts that we were talking about, Worm, Familiar, and Air?
I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, I would say they were shot over about... I think they were both like around 5 days.
I think, Worm was over 2 weekends because we had to shoot in the school.
Because some of it was a high school, yeah, and we had to strategically shoot when clearly there was no class. We'd have to bring our crew in and dress, you know, the production designer and art department had to dress up the rooms and whatnot mm-hmm. how we wanted. And
then, it was 5 days. Air was 4 days.
Did the high school know the subject matter of the film before they agreed to let you shoot there?
There's a funny story about that. Here's the thing. Knowing we needed a school, and knowing that we had a school that was interested, what they asked for was us to submit the script.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we'd already lined up all of the elements. We'd made agreements to rent the gear to get all of our cast and crew. So I wasn't really willing to risk them shutting the movie down by saying, you can't, and this is a Catholic high school.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't going to allow them to not let us shoot there. So what I did is I kind of went through the Worm screenplay, and I essentially dummied down all of the dialogue and took out all of the Barbie, anything that kind of seemed really sharp and mean. And at the end of it, I think I put in some tag where the idea is he was possessed or something, so it just made it seem like there was some kind of a cheesy supernatural element, and it wasn't just depraved semen horror story. And who knows if they ever actually read it, I don't know, but I wouldn't have felt comfortable submitting the real script, so I didn't. And essentially, it's like showing teachers in a bad light. It wouldn't have been the... But you never know how that could have been misinterpreted. They could have thought that this was some sort of an indictment on the education system, which it's not. It's just one guy's story who happens to be a teacher, and we never know how, and then all of a sudden we don't get to shoot there, and our film is in deep trouble, so didn't let that happen. And the scary thing about these pictures, Worm, Familiar, Air, these characters Richard's creating are actual people living amongst us in this world.
Exactly.
But you just wouldn't know it until you open a newspaper and a tragedy just happened. That's probably one of the scariest things that I think, and a lot of people come to me and tell me, yeah, you know, these movies are terrifying because they're fucking real. Like, there's nothing out of the ordinary. There's no aliens. There's none of this sci-fi kind of stuff. They're just real, crazy, scary individuals, basically in dramatic settings.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it even scarier, because you have these crazy characters living in, like, real dramatic settings,
and you're just waiting for them to blow up.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, but before I go there, I was going to say the one line that I hope you took out of the script for Worm before presenting to the school was my favorite line, and it's where if you parted that greasy mop of yours, we'd find a whole bunch of scars left by your mom's coat hanger. I mean, that's poetry.
I definitely don't think the Catholic school board got to see that line.
But
yeah, there was that's a really on goal pushing film just by using dialogue and words. It really repels a lot of people.
Without a doubt, and as you said before, I mean, as the character continues, yeah, of course, you know, at the beginning you might sympathize with him, yeah, you know, I mean, we all go through this 9-to-5 grind, and we all have these feelings of this, like, boredom and ennui and frustration, but yeah, as it continues on, he just gets more and more unhinged, and more and more like, okay, this man is, he's not all there, there's something really seriously fucked up about him, and it is scary, and going on, moving on to Familiar, the same thing, and with Aaron, like you said before, you know, I mean, I love horror of all sorts. I mean, I love creatures, I love monsters, I love all that stuff, but there's nothing scarier than men, than humanity, you know? Because they live among us. I mean, you have to, there's a leap of faith whether or not, you know, ghosts exist, or whether, you know, Freddy Krueger is out there. I mean, you gotta be sort of like, you know, sort of like take that, like, leap and say, okay, I believe in the supernatural, whatever, but I mean, we all know what humanity is capable of, and we sort of know it on a grand scale. But on the other hand, I mean, individual humans, you know, the guy sitting next to you on the subway, the guy teaching your kids, man,
that's
like,
it, yeah.
We don't know what's in
there. I mean, you could take the scariest movie. You name the scariest movie you could think of, I'll just throw you onto one ISIS website and you tell me what you're more worried about. You know what I mean?
It's totally true.
One's very real and happening right now in 2015, and one is complete make-believe. You know what I mean? So go down to Mexico, you know what I mean? Some of these cartel areas. You think Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees is scary? I don't think so, man. Cartels are scary. So, humanity, yeah, it's the scariest thing ever. I 100% what you said. I love all types of horror. Like, what I say about, you know, maybe slashers or any type of subgenre in horror, I love all of it. It's just this happens to kind of be the thing that I guess I'm tapped into and I'm capable of doing. So, I just have, obviously, what if I'm talking about my work, that's the thing that I'm able to talk about, I guess, most passionately. But I love all of it equally, so.
In some of the dialogue, I mean, that you have, that you put into the minds of these characters are just unbelievable, you know? I'm watching it go. I mean, there's, you know, choice words like, you know, for example, Familiar, when he says Rob Nolan's character, John Dodds, is his wife, you know, please don't touch me, you pig, and just things like that. It's just things that, you know, we think, but we don't, you know, we don't have, it's all,
but you won't admit to thinking it.
Exactly, it's our internal monologue, and, you know, it's funny because we look at these, the people in the street that we call, you know, so-called crazy, you know? The ones that are sort of shouting at the heavens, the ones that are talking, well, they're not crazy. I mean, it's just that their internal monologue is external, you know?
Absolutely.
They're saying,
some of my favorite dialogue in Familiar is just the opening scenes when you're just, you know, you're just looking through the house and you see them in bed, like, it's like I watch the movie and I'm just like, shit, I've thought these things before. Like, it's just crazy how even I can relate to some of it. Not like the crazy, you know, like when it gets really dark and deep, but like, everyone can relate to this. You know, whether or not you're going to act on it or just think it, or it really is scary. That's what makes these characters that much scarier, because it's real. They are out there. Not they can be, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing too is the thing that all of the films do, and that I'm interested in continuing to do, is a lot of horror deals kind of with these extremes of masked killers or demonic possessions, where the stakes are always life and death, right? There's a lot of horror, and there's a lot of really scary stuff in subtlety, and in subtle human indifference, and cruelty, and selfishness. I think real evil isn't born out of a desire to murder. It's born out of being selfish. It's putting your needs before somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
And a perfect example of that is, you know, like, natural resources, you know what I mean? Like, if there's two tribes fighting over a hole of water, right? You don't kill them because you hate them. You kill them because you don't want them drinking your water. And that's based out of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of horror doesn't deal with that. A lot of horror just is, oh, this guy wants revenge because he drowned in a lake and they ignore him. Or, you know what I mean? I think
a lot of real motivations for a lot of real human evil. It's very small, subtle things that doesn't ever really get explored. Some of those things might be frustrated ambition, like in Worm, or in Familiar, you know what I mean? Somebody feels like they didn't live the life they wanted. And then in there, it's just frustrated desire and an ability to cope with your own DNA and your genetics that are compelling you to do something that your whole life you fought against and that is wrong, but you have to do it anyways because it's driving you to. I just think there's a lot more room for exploration of subtle horror. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen a lot. I think that's our little niche that we're starting to carve out.
Yeah, and I think you sort of hit the nail on the head when you said frustration, because that's really the link of those Familiar and Air. It has to do with whether it's frustration in your day-to-day existence, your job, or your desires. It's an inability to express what's inside, so that when you do, so you ultimately just explode into these horrific ways. So that I guess that would be the connective thread between these three films.
Absolutely. Because what we're calling it, we're loosely calling it the Box Cutter Trilogy. And obviously the main connection is Robert. The secondary connection is each film features a box cutter in some way or another. And then finally, like you said, this repression leads to explosion, right? And the thing is, and this is actually something that I wasn't aware of until I actually read somebody writing this about all of the films. So in Worm, you have the voice, and in Familiar, you have the voice, and that's how those two are connected. Well, if you think about it, in Air, Bill Overs sort of represents an external voice.
Right.
It's the exact same thing as the voice in the other shorts, except it's a living, breathing embodiment of that same voice compelling you to do something. So all films have it. In Air, Bill is the physical version of that voice. That's pretty cool. I haven't heard that before, but that's pretty fucking cool, man. I think that's a really cool relation, whoever pointed that out. That's very, very cool. So, yeah, I think that's pretty dead on, too. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I would be, I'd be remiss in asking both of you. I mean, first of all, what are some of your favorite horror films, and also what were some of your inspirations?
I would say, from a very early age, from the first time I saw it, I just fell in love with the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's just such a perfect example of what a horror film is. It genuinely horrifies, even after all of these years. And it does so in unexpected ways. The characters in that movie are all very human, even the villains. There's no supernatural explanation. It's just purely horror. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a messed up spot that these kids happen to wander into.
Exactly.
And bad things happen. And I just something so pure and simple about that. And it's just the execution, and it's just Leatherface is such a brilliant character. So there's that. And then obviously, honestly, the funny thing is for a lot of, my teens and early 20s, the stuff that I really liked was horror, but then I started watching more dramatic and world cinema, and that's kind of what actually started making me think more about these more psychological themes and then some of these more subtle things. And it's kind of like reverse engineering. I'm bringing that stuff into the horror genre. So my inspiration is actually kind of, it comes from trying to infuse some of these elements you would find in more dramatic films and kind of putting them into these horror film settings and kind of getting this hybrid effect. So, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, I think, my favorite horror film, and then obviously something like The Exorcist, I think is a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's just non-dramatic films. I love, Akira Kurosawa films, Seven Samurai, stuff like that. And then I'm also big into westerns as well, so, anything John Ford, Howard Hawks, stuff like that.
So I'm wondering, are you familiar with, you must be, especially working the short genre, short film genre, Douglas Buck?
Douglas Buck. It's funny. He's actually somebody that I wasn't aware of until after I made Familiar. People started making, I don't even remember, what the comparison is, other than the fact that I guess it was, self-mutilation or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started researching him. I started researching him, and it's Cutting Moments is the main one that he did, right?
Yes.
Kind of the one that got him his most notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what's funny is, I hadn't heard about Douglas until we released Familiar, and then Familiar got into Fantasia, and when we were at Fantasia, Douglas Monk was there in the screening, and I actually went up and introduced myself, so that's actually kind of a weird way that I ran into him, so...
Well, no, I mean, it's a compliment because, I mean, like I said, like, Cutting Moments is up there, like I said, with some of the most disturbing things I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of disturbing stuff, and your films are up there as well. I mean, Air left me shaken. When I was done, I was like, whoa, like, I liked it, but then I felt like, should I like it? You know what I mean? There was this real feeling of, like, something, I just saw something that was... extremely transgressive, extremely taboo shattering, and yet at the other hand extremely brilliant, and that's why I really appreciated Air. I just thought it an unbelievable piece of work.
I really appreciate that a lot.
Mm-hmm. And we'd be remiss as well if we didn't talk about the effects work in Air, which is pretty incredible as well.
We worked with a company, The Butcher Shop,
yep,
here in Toronto. They did Familiar. Ryan Lalaji, Carlos Enriquez, great guys.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan actually was, we met Ryan back, me and Richard met Ryan back, took a meeting with Ryan back in like 2005, when we set out to do Consumption. There was a lot of, that was a true story, based on a true story about a cannibal. So there was a lot of heavy effects, a lot of pretty heavy effects and blood, and you can imagine, with cannibalism. And so Ryan, remember he worked really hard building the torso and all that good stuff. There was neck, throat slice. There was a lot of good effects in Consumption. So that was our first time working with Ryan from The Butcher Shop, and then we've had the pleasure of working with those boys ever since then. And our amazing cinematographer, Michael Davidson, who shot the gorgeous and sexy Familiar, he came back, and we just had such a great rapport with the guy, and we love working together, such a good guy. He shot Air, and we couldn't be happier with that. I think that such a sexy piece of cinema that is going to live forever. And we're just so thrilled with all the crew, the cast, everybody on Air. Just really worked hard to bring this amazing piece of cinema to life. And we're just super thrilled to hear people like yourself really like the movies and talk highly of them, because we make them for yourself and the world, the public.
Mm-hmm.
So when we hear the things you have to say, it's like music to our ears. There's like nothing better.
So, I mean, Air is making the festival rounds now, and you guys have been getting, I guess...
Air is making the festival rounds now. It's played about 7. It's got about 4 screenings coming up. This month, it's playing New York Horror Film Festival in New York. It's going to be playing Leeds International in the UK later this month. We are in a festival coming up in Atlanta called Buried Alive. We've already had the amazing honor of playing fantastic film festivals like Fantasia, Toronto After Dark. I really feel terrible. I know I'm leaving so many out, and I don't want to, but every festival we've got into, we are just, like, so happy and honored to be a part of any film festival, because we make these movies essentially to get onto the festival circuit and be seen. So just getting into these festivals, like I said, it's an award in itself. And then if you happen to win an award, that's an amazing little bonus.
And so after Air, I mean, what's next for Fail Pictures? You mentioned a feature. Is that something you're going to be going to production on, or at least pre-production in the next little while?
Yeah, well, the plan is definitely. We're in very, very, very early stages of pre-pro now on a couple things. I know Victor's just finishing up one of our scripts right now that we potentially is going to be our debut feature film. We're hoping Worm feature, that we have a short film that our short film Worm from 2010. It's done very well for us. It's won a handful of awards. That's essentially like the little calling card to the feature film. A lot of people shoot trailers to try to make a feature. Well, we actually have shot an award-winning short film on 16mm as a lead-in for the feature.
Mm-hmm.
And the feature film is a whole
whole big business just to go with like something. So it's 15 minutes of the day of the life of Jeffrey Dahmer. The feature film just it really tells into much, much more, you know, much greater scale. A lot more characters are introduced and involved. And you really get to see a lot more of Jeffrey Dahmer.
I can't wait to see it. I mean, the one thing you know that you guys have built thus far, great artists when they build up a body of work. I mean, there's this unifying sort of feel to it. You know, I mean, when you see something by a certain filmmaker, you say, okay, well, that's a Cronenberg. I can tell right away. You know, and you know when I'm watching your films, and there's like you're putting your
that's a Richard Powell right there.
That's a Richard Powell. I mean, there's an imprint that you guys are leaving on these films, and it's incredible stuff. I mean, like I'm watching, I'm just like I'm excited for you guys, and
amazing. Like honestly, that fucking is the best thing I've ever heard, and I know Richard talked about that too.
it's very important. I believe in the auteur theory to a degree. I believe in the idea of like one creative person sort of focusing and forging with their vision. The thing about the auteur theory I don't agree with is the idea that one person is the author of the thing because kind of disregards everybody else's contributions. And I really know this is not possible for all of our collaborators.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the thing is in the writing and in the directing. That's where I'm able to sort of forge my vision, and I really do like the idea of all of the films having a consistent tone, or even the idea of a shared universe, and I like all the idea that all of these characters could exist in the same world, and it's important to me that, because when I was, years ago, when I first wanted to start making films, I thought what was most important was maybe doing, with something like, limited is something like what Tarantino does, where it's like he makes one movie every 5 or 6 years, but now as he's getting a bit older, I like the idea of just pumping a bunch out there, and so that each film individually doesn't have to stand and shine on its own, but contributes to a larger canvas. And when you look at all of that stuff, you can appreciate what the filmmakers are trying to say with their entire body of work, not just one film. And so I think the idea of being more prolific is a way to really establish your mark. And so that's why I just want to keep making films in this vein. I know Zach was saying, yeah, the future is next. I mean, hopefully the future is next, but if it's not, I've got another 2 shorts that I ran to make. And they're very similar to one of the air. Obviously, you with different subject matter, but very similar.
I just want to clarify quickly. A lot of filmmakers make short films and then almost force it into a feature length story. I really don't want people to think that's the case with Wurman Familiar. There really is such great stories to really delve into and go into and explain and explore. Nothing's being forced. I think that when I hear of filmmakers, oh, I have a feature based off one of my shorts. Like, we're actually, these feature films are, we're almost feature ideas when Richard set out to write the short films. And a lot of the reviews, like when you watch the movies, they play like features. You think you're watching a feature, and then when it abruptly ends, you're like, hey, what's going on? I really want to see a lot more of this.
Well, I think what you're saying about shorts feeling kind of strained when they become features, I think high concept short films where, like, maybe the short film is about, I don't know, some inanimate object that kills people or something, and it's funny for 2 minutes, and then you try to make it into a feature, and it doesn't work. I mean, there's the shorts that we've done, there's a lot of room for expansion, and there's a lot of room for real depth, and really
yes.
diving into what these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think looking at 20 minutes of warm or familiar air, you think we can, all of our story has been told in that amount of time, you're kidding yourself. Those are just the beginnings. There's such larger room for expansion. And
they're like little teasers.
Yeah.
But they are.
Yeah, no, I mean, because these are, in its essence, psychological studies, I mean, I can definitely see a lot more room for further exploration and a lot more room for further, let's just say, messing up the minds of the audiences with some more.
Absolutely, man. I can't wait to see what I can do with 90 minutes. Like, 90 minutes of air, you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
I've got a feature concept or that I know how I want to do it. You know what I mean? Worm's done and familiar. I'm finishing it tonight. So, not like 90 minutes of being inside of one of the characters from Worm Familiar's head. That's going to be a lot. And I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of an impact that's going to have on people.
I can't wait to see it, but so Air is making the festival rounds right now. But I mean, for those that want to see your previous short films, how can they get access?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to crowbar in at any point now. And for everybody in North America that wants to see Familiar, it's on iTunes right now, and I highly suggest if you're interested to see good cinema, thought-provoking cinema that's really going to make a lasting impression on you. And you can see what we're discussing, what we've been discussing on this podcast. You can get a little taste. Unfortunately, Worm is not out for distribution to purchase. But it's we're working on that. We're working on we're working on getting Worm available for everybody. So right now we have... right now Familiar is on iTunes just in North America. It's going to be released in the Europe and the UK in the very near future. We just wanted to do a trial run in North America and see how it went. And it's been doing fairly well, actually, on iTunes. It's been getting a lot of downloads, which we're very thrilled about.
I'll just throw in my endorsement and say that it's well worth whatever the cost it is to download it.
It's $2.99, and 70% goes back to the filmmaker. So you'd really be helping us basically produce our next movie. Because any money, it's not about the profit whatsoever. Mm. The whole point was strategically to get Familiar on iTunes for North America to be able to get at their fingertips.
It's an incredible piece of short cinema, and I mean, as I said before, everything you guys have done has left an incredible impression on me, and I knew that, you know, when I first saw Air, I said to myself, these guys have talent, and I want to talk to these guys because I have a feeling they're really smart guys, and you know, you've kind of proven that through this interview. So I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you very much. You know, this really means a lot to give us a place to vent and talk about our films and production company. I mean, we do it for people like yourself and for the world to embrace. I mean, without you guys and without the public going to buy tickets to film festivals, I mean, there's no point in making the movies.
Mm-hmm.
On the other thing, it is nice whenever you come across anybody that is either a critic or just... anybody that covers film festivals in general, anybody who is around it, anybody who kind of has an appreciation for some of the stuff, the more serious stuff that we're trying to do, it's refreshing, because the thing is a lot of times festival atmosphere kind of, it engenders this attitude that everybody's more interested in the party film or the films that are a laugh. And again, there's room for that stuff, but there's also should be room for, you know, serious cinema, serious as well. And might not see it, but a lot of the times films like ours do kind of get pushed to the side and ignored, because it's not, at the end of it, you don't feel necessarily uplifted and you don't feel satisfied in the way that you kind of want to going into a movie. But like health food, sometimes you need films like this to feed you and to nourish you and to keep the art form vital. And if everything is junk food, cinema, like a person, is going to just become unhealthy and sick and die.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that you have smart food, intelligent film. And so anybody that covers it, instead of covering the next short that's about zombies or whatever you will, it helps, and it gives us a platform and shows us that there's still interest in it. Especially in North America, where, to be honest, it's not like Europe, it's not like South America, and even Asia, where there is a lot more emphasis on serious cinema, just the funny stuff and the silly stuff too, but our stuff gets a lot more play and traction outside of North America, so when anybody in North America like yourself takes an interest and tries to help point it out and point people in this direction, it's very helpful, and we just really appreciate it, so thank you.
Absolutely, because...
Yeah, we need it. So,
well, like I said, it's well deserved, and I mean, you know, I've always maintained that, you know, genre films, particularly the horror genre, I mean, people sometimes dismiss it just because it is what it is. You know, it's horror, but the reality is, horror is can be great art. It can be challenging. It can be cerebral.
Yeah.
And whenever I find horror films that are art, I mean, I just want to champion them and promote them because, you know, it's my favorite genre. And yeah, of course, as you said, like with the analogy, sure. I mean, there are times when I'd like to eat, a Big Mac. I don't know. I don't really eat many Big Macs, but I mean,
100%.
But then there are other times when you want to have a really good steak dinner, you know. And
absolutely.
What I'm seeing from you guys is good steak dinner. And I, like I said, I'm excited for you guys because I see talent, and I can't wait to see you guys put out next. So, once again, thank you
so much, man. Honestly, Jeff, that means so much to us. It really does. And I just wanted to also encourage everyone listening to check out FatalPictures.com to find out all the up-and-coming air screenings. Again, check out Familiar on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Fatal Pictures. And we're actually on Instagram as well now at Fatal Pictures.
Hey guys, well, have a wonderful night. Thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Really appreciate it, and we hope you have a fabulous night.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.